Do you know the gymnopédie? I had no idea what he was talking about. I was 20 and just falling in love with classical music because I was falling in love with him. He could hear the first few bars of any symphony and tell me in what decade it was composed. At Powell Hall, his long, slender pianist's fingers drummed on his leg and his face was rapt. I wanted to live in the music the way he did. And when he played Eric Satie's Gymnopédie, I stepped through that door. Haunting is the first word that comes to mind. The melody's ghost lingered, changing the very air. The gymnopédie, a word I now know means three nude dances, were indeed bare, simple, vulnerable, tender, wistful, melancholy. I played them often over the next three decades, yet never knew much about Satie until I read Ian Penman's new book. At once a slender biography, a diary, an etude, and a playful experiment, it turns a bit self-indulgent, stitching Penman's own likes and stray thoughts into a glossary in the middle and using his writing diary as part three. His prose is as artful and elegantly light as Satie's music, and he wants us to know it. That said, the biographical opening alone is worth the book's price. Three-piece suite begins with an account of Entr'acte, a jokey, rapid-fire collage of a film created by Satie, René Clair, and Francis Picabia. Satie pokes the audience, popping echoes of popular music into the classical score, and the overall approach is what Penman calls seat-of-the-pants surrealism, years before surrealism's official birth. Things zoom and stutter and levitate and vanish at the drop of a hat. Balloon heads inflate and deflate. A female ballet dancer turns out to be Satie in drag. Man Ray and Marcel Duchamp play chess in the rain. A runaway hearse is led by a camel. What? All these years, I've thought of Satie as so serious. A sensitive man, I assumed, and a moody one, exquisitely attuned to beauty, no doubt trailing a string of disastrous love affairs. He would have been an ascetic and an atheist, unable to find comfort in either physical pleasure or divine, and a gentle friend, always ready to console. I pictured him hatless, wearing a flowing white poet's shirt. I got only the sensitivity and the moods right. Satie dressed in dark suits of velvet or corduroy and topped them with a bowler hat a la Magritte, pince-nez glasses, and an umbrella. The epitome of an eccentric bachelor, he had only one intense, passionate love affair, an interlude with painter and former high-wire artist Suzanne Valadon, who broke it off 5 months later. Atheist, he was so susceptible to religious mystery that he joined a Rosicrucian sect. A friend nicknamed him Esoteric Satie, then founded his own church. Satie's Église Métropolitaine d'Art de Jésus Conducteur was meant to be a refuge where the Catholic faith and the arts, which are indissolubly bound to it, shall grow and prosper, sheltered from profanity and the workings of evil. Yet he would have experienced both of those at his favorite hangout, Le Chat Noir in Montmartre. Far from ascetic, he drank hard and died young of cirrhosis of the liver. Nobody reports ever having seen him plastered, though. He was not sloppy about his indulgences. As for gentle friendship, he seems to have pissed off quite a few people, including his more worldly friend, Claude Debussy. When Satie died, his friends entered a hoarder's apartment layered with dust and found, stuffed inside a piano, a bundle of unsent letters addressed to Suzanne Valadon. They also found their own letters to Satie, unopened. He had consulted the return address and answered without ever reading them. The more I read, the more intrigued I am by this funny, irritable, idiosyncratic little man whose mien bears such little relationship to his gymnopédie, or to his jazz, or his Nocien. Early on, he left the bright animation of Paris for the suburb of Arcueil, where life was calmer, plainer, and cheaper. On Thursdays, he took school children on musical outings. At the age of 39, he returned to school and studied the antique forms of counterpoint and polyphony. When he composed Sports and Divertissement, stealing the title from an advertising slogan, he wrote in his introduction, "I have put into it everything I know about boredom. I dedicate this chorale to those who do not like me." Audacious and playful, he had no time for elaborate, heavily, fussy, self-important symphonic works. "Keep it short," he urged young composers. He was never scared of doing what others might diss as small, slight, or insignificant. "The smallest work by Satie is small in the way a keyhole is small," Cocteau remarked. And when Satie wrote tongue-in-cheek instructions for any musician eager to, quote, play like Satie, they included, "Be an hour late, be unaware of your own presence, bury the sound, dance inwardly, detached but not dry, even duller if you can, have a drink, laugh without anyone knowing." As Penman notes, his humor isn't diversion, sauce, or skin. There, from the very beginning, it's who he is, an antic spirit. In 1918, long before there were ways to inject such music into the home, Satie began to write furniture music, household compositions, he explained as practical, mundane, nothing to do with art. "Furniture music," he wrote, "creates vibrations. It has no other purpose. It fills the same role as light, warmth, and comfort in all its forms. It is not tiring. It is French. It is unusable. It is not boring. Listen without feeling awkward." Again and again, he proved in both life and work that it was possible to be radical and lighthearted at the same time, a combination I've always wanted to believe possible. How did he pull it off? With a politics of sympathy, not moral superiority. With delight in his work itself, not the cachet or the money. He once scolded someone for offering to pay him too extravagant an amount. And with a fresh, restless imagination that scattered itself across many forms. Daily, he wrote little jokes and theories on scraps of paper and tossed them into an upside-down hat for safekeeping. Yet there's none of this brio in the Gymnopédie. Reviewer Constant Lambert describes their juxtaposition of short lyrical phrases of great tenderness with ostinatos of extreme and deliberate bareness, with the almost eerie harmonies coming not from the chords themselves, but from the unexpected relationships he discovers between them. Ignoring the trends and institutions of his time, he composed far ahead of himself. As Penman points out, the Gymnopédie and Nocturne do not sound like 19th century concert hall music. They sound like pieces composed by someone who knew there would one day be recording studios, their technology capable of capturing ethereal, delicate subtlety without fighting to be heard. Would Satie be startled to know how profoundly his music would touch us? Or did he see that coming, too?